You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie, S-E-E-T-A. Sometimes I say it like Sita with a D, but it's actually S-E-E-T-A Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard every Monday, and we also have a podcast at WWBC on the Demand Podcast, which Ellen will tell our listeners in a minute about that. All the shows can be downloaded on Sita Media Inc.
WBC, and the iTunes for some reason it kind of had a malfunction, so we're going to get that back up and running here very shortly. And but definitely go to sitamedia.com and you'll be able to get all of our shows, all of our shows.
Well,
last
thank you
7 years worth.
Yeah, someone told me they went on the iTunes and they couldn't download the show, so
right?
I sent
That's
you that.
Kind of sparked me, so whoever told you that, thank them.
Right. So every week, every Monday, Ellen and I meet fabulous people in our studio, and we heat up the airwaves, whether it's something that's going on here locally, whether it's nationally, or around the world. We just like to get involved in the conversation and use our voices in a very positive manner. We all know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we try to see both sides of every topic, of every situation, and try to come up by solving things. And isn't that what we're all here on Earth to do, right?
Yeah.
To get involved and use our voices in a positive manner to enhance our lives and the lives of other people in our world. And so I don't know about you guys, but maybe I should just introduce our guests right now before we go on, because we've had like a spirited discussion just before we got on air, and I'm a little bit distracted because I want to save the world, right? So I have next to me the handsome Matt Price, who is an RN who works at Wusthof Hospital, and also we have Sherry. Sherry's here with us as well. Sherry Daly. Thank you. Sherry's also an RN, and she works at the hospital. And we were talking before we went on air about patient safety and how healthcare has changed, and what can we do as healthcare professionals to make our profession better and be advocates for the people that we take care of. So welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sita.
And we also have, today's a nurse show. We have a gal who's calling in from Franklin, Indiana. Her name is Carrie Reinhardt, and she's calling in to talk today about her daughter, Emma, who passed away at the age of 13 from cancer. And she's going to talk with us a little bit about some of the cancer-causing agents that they've discovered in the environment there in Indiana and what she is doing about that. So while we wait for Carrie to call in, let's just say, did anybody hear about what's going on in Puerto Rico and all the chaos, the protests that's going on there? Have you been following that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Yeah, and it seems as though the people they're asking themselves, what kind of government do we want, and where do we want to go from here? There are people on the streets are talking about statehood, anti-statehood. They're talking about federal dollars from the United States going to Puerto Rico, what happened after the hurricane. And it's quite fascinating when you hear all the voices, what's going on there. I see you're shaking your head,
yeah,
Carrie.
Yeah, they're demanding the resignation of that Ricky...
The governor, but he's refusing to do so. Yeah. He said he will not run for re-election, though.
But, you know, the thing is, you have to have a plan. If he resigns, then what's the plan?
That's
is the country going to fall into a chaotic state like after the Hurricane Maria? You know, so I've been listening to it, and one gentleman was saying that there's so much federal dollars that are going to Puerto Rico, and they want to know what's happening. The people would like to work. They would like to open their own businesses. They would like to have competition amongst themselves. And they're finding that so many foreign investors come to Puerto Rico and invest, but they don't pay the taxes. It's a mess. You almost want to go there yourself and start from scratch and reinvent a wheel at every single institution and say, well, this is how it's done.
Yeah, a lot of manufacturers there for years have been from outside that Puerto Rico. They're not living there and owning there.
I know, but I mean, they said he was saying really bad things in a chat, I don't know what, about women and whatever. And
emails were released.
Yeah.
And they were from some pretty disturbing things that he wrote about female politicians and other parts of the population in a very demeaning way.
Well, my God, we know a lot of people that say demeaning things about women and bully others, and nobody, and that they don't seem to budge. We've got so many people that have had accusations about inappropriate behavior and whatever, and whatever the Puerto Ricans are doing. I was looking at the footage on CNN, and the people had pots and pans. Some of them were cooking, some were eating. Some were drawing. I'm like, this looks like a party. I should just go down there and join the crowd with my curry chicken and rice and get a pot going. But anyway, I wish them well, and I hope by staying engaged and getting involved in their communities, they can make a difference. Because, you know, we all talk about getting involved in our communities and being peaceful about it, and it is a peaceful protest from what we're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we've had people in the United States protesting all over about the environmental concerns. Who remembered Monsanto? Did you ever go to any of the demonstrations against Monsanto and the chemicals and the food?
Yeah, and the GMOs.
Right, and we've all had this stuff in Satellite Beach as well, right? We had Satellite Beach in the news when people were talking about what was happening in the groundwater and all the people who were getting coming back with positive cancer results for that as well, right?
And rare cancers as well.
Yeah, and so I was watching CNN, and I saw this beautiful lady on there speaking. Her name is Carrie Reinhart, and she was talking to the audience about her daughter, Emma, who had passed away at the age of 13. And I know that you could say the name of that cancer.
Glioblastoma.
Right. That's what it was. And being a nurse, I should be able to say that, but I never could. And so I contacted Carrie, and I asked her if she wanted to call in on our show today. And she is. And I think she's on the phone calling in from Franklin, Indiana. Are you on the phone, dear?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How's things in Indiana today? How's the weather?
Today, it's not as hot. It's raining today, which we need the rain, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, you know, I told you that I lived in Marion, Indiana for about 3 years, and I absolutely love the people in Marion, Indiana. They treated us with respect, and they wanted to get to know our cultures, and I got to know theirs, and they were all about family.
Yeah, Indiana, you'll find that across the board. I think it's a pretty traditional kind of Hoosier value.
Yes. You know, I was telling a friend of mine, I said one of the memories that stand out for me in Indiana was when they had stuff for Halloween, stuff doing with the pumpkin patch and going out in the nights and stuff. Everybody went to the hay rides, and everybody went with it was amazing to see so many people involved in the small town events. And that's what I like about Indiana and the memories I have there is the community comes together. And I was very pleased that the community also got together behind you as well. So tell our listeners a little bit about your beautiful child, Emma, who left this planet too early, in my opinion.
Emma Grace was, she was a joyful spirit, and we always called her an old soul ever since she was little. She was a very intuitive child, and she was a swimmer and an artist, and just a happy kid who was always smiling and always happy. She always was looking at the bright side of things.
So what happened? Now, Emma was 13, and when was she diagnosed with cancer? And so tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Tina and Friends a little bit about the background of her illness and what happened.
Emma was a perfectly healthy kid. That all changed September 5th of 2014. I was working in the ER, and my ex-husband had taken the kids that day for their routine eye exam, and he texted me and asked me if I knew what papilledema was, and I instantly was very nervous because papilledema is the medical term for optic nerve swelling, and it's indicates that you have brain swelling going on. So I told her to put her in the car and bring her to me. And in the meantime, I called the eye doctor to discuss what he had seen. And when sometimes you would see a patient in the ER who had papilledema, and or they thought they had seen papilledema, but it was really borderline and not so much, and was more just them covering to make sure that everything was good. But with Emma, when I talked to the eye doctor, I became very nervous because he said, if you have a resident working today, you should have them look at it, which meant to me that it was blatantly obvious, and that's bad. So she came to me in my ER, and they ordered an MRI to look at her brain, and it was a regular MRI with no contrast, and they came in and said they were going to give her contrast, and in that moment I knew that my child had a brain tumor, because they wouldn't have given her that contrast if they didn't see something, so to begin with. So then that began
devastating.
Just a whirlwind. Ugh. Yeah.
Oh,
just
my
the whirlwind. And from there we went to the local Riley Hospital, and Emma spent a week there, and that's when we discovered that she had a glioblastoma, that it was going to be inoperable, and that our time was going to be very short.
Yeah, and I was reading that article when Emma asked you, Mommy, am I going to die? And that just broke my heart, because, you know, when you, I've been following you on Facebook, and your postings about Emma, thank you so much for keeping her alive for all of us who are following you and all the activism that you guys are doing there. But it just broke my heart what you told her. You basically told her to just, let's just live every day as it comes, and that you were going to try to get her the best care possible.
Yeah, and that was, in that moment, it was a really tough place to be, because, like I said before, as a nurse, as soon as I saw Emma's MRI images, I was relatively certain that this was terminal without ever having a single biopsy, because of the it was massive. And one of our first rules was, we're not going to Google this. Because I knew what she would see, and if she Googled it, and that she would find out. Most people, the 5-year survival rate for glioblastomas, I believe, for adults who have the ability to have surgery, is less than 10%.
Yeah, so, yeah, I saw that. And so then you contacted the Indiana Children's Wish Foundation, and you guys took Emma to Paris on a trip. Why Paris? Was that a place she always wanted to go?
Emma always wanted to go to Paris, and the Indiana Children's Wish Fund sent us. A friend had put in Emma's name, and they jumped on it, and they asked, and I knew without asking Emma she would want to go to Paris, but I figured that was asking a lot. But at that point, we were go big or go home, given what was going on with her. So she had wanted to go because my best friend and I had been to Paris together a couple of times, my best friends from Europe. And so she kept saying, when I turn 16, Mom, I don't want you to buy me a car. I want you to take me to Paris.
Oh.
And I kept telling her she was going to change her mind, but she wanted to go see all the places that Roxy and I had been. And like I said, what 13-year-old girl doesn't want to go to Paris? But I asked, and they actually had a single donor who came forward and funded our entire trip. So for myself, myself, all three of our children, Emma's dad.
And I know. I saw that, and then she slipped into a coma when she came home. How long did she live after her trip?
3 days.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. You know, I'm glad we were talking about this, because, you know, many times people see organizations like the Children's Wish Foundation and they hesitate to donate. So I'm glad they did that. So
right.
People understand that they do help. So how were you and your husband able to put together that something was going on with the environment, and to identify potential environmental cancer causing agents there? In where you live, how did all that come about?
Well, I was actually single at the time, and I had been contacted by a local reporter through an acquaintance to Stacey Davidson, who co-founded If It Was Your Child with me. We hadn't met at that point, and we started with this story. This local reporter, Sandra Chapman, sat us down in a group, and she was smart and had us do a survey before the story and talked about asked where our kids were when they were diagnosed, how old they were, where did they, you know, did they go to the babysitter and at grandma's in a different town, so they spent a lot of time there. You know, it was very detailed, and she was the first one to see that when we knew we had a lot of kids from Johnson County, but she was the first one to really see that more of these kids than not are in Franklin, and if they're not in Franklin, they probably are spending a large amount of time in Franklin, either through a travel sport or a relative that they are with frequently, and so then it went from there to just kind of mapping the kids, making a list and mapping them, and once they were mapped, then it started to really pinpoint things. And then during that same story, Sandra Chapman discovered that there were some sites that were kind of being overlooked. So we went with those sites, and then Stacy and I just kept kind of trudging along. We got hooked up with Trevor Schaefer from Trevor's Trek and worked on getting Trevor's Law passed, which helps redefine cancer clusters. It's something that hasn't been done for decades. And it just has snowballed from there. Then we began working with Edison Wetlands, pulling documents specifically from the EPA about these sites around where we had all these kids, which this Amphenol site was only a half mile as a crow flies north of me. And our sewer system, we found out later, directly ran into that house. And that's where we lived for a majority of Emma's life.
Yeah, so it's, but you know, I was disheartened to read... But you know, Carrie, I was disheartened to read that the Indiana Department of Health found no evidence of the cluster and they closed the investigation. But I'm proud that you guys kept pushing on.
Right. So our first encounter with the Indiana State Department of Health was in 2015 when the story first came out. Of course, everyone wanted to know what was going on, and they said that they did a cancer cluster analysis and that we did, despite the fact that our county rate was higher. What we discovered later was that the county rate was higher because the city of Franklin itself had so many kids that it was bumping the average. They've now done three total, and all three times they've come back and said, we don't have a cancer cluster. The problem is the way cancer cluster guidelines are written, they're written in an antiquated old way. So next door to our house, I found out later, we had three other children with brain tumors within a block, and was it all within 3 years of each other, so a total of four kids. But because all four of those kids had different brain tumors, the way the state analyzes it now, they're not considered a cluster because they're not the exact same type. That's ridiculous. Our science is well beyond that now in healthcare. And so that's one of the ways we're telling, you know, the Trevor's Law will change that. It will group like cancers together. So, for example, blood cancer is blood cancer. It doesn't matter if you have ALL or AML, it's still blood cancer. So they can't try to separate it out because that's one of the ways that, you know, the data gets diluted.
So people in the legislative arena were saying in Indiana, this is not bad luck. This is happening in your town. Were people just looking at this and shaking their head and just saying, well, we don't know what's going on? Or were they taking an active role to say, let's talk to our state legislators and people who are elected into office and say, come take a look at what's happening? You guys had, 52 kids, 52 families, that their world was turned upside down?
I think our number's up to 68 now. And yeah, we had a lot of luck at first with Trevor's Law. That was something, of course, everyone wants to sign on and say, oh, yeah, I want to help kids. When we started getting into the nitty-gritty of, hey, we have contamination, we've now proven that we have contamination, what are we going to do? That's when things get a little bit rougher. We had an excellent relationship with Senator Donnelly. He helped us get $1 million appropriated for Trevor's Law guidelines to be written, and that was kind of spelled out. He was advocate for us big time. And then Senator Brown came in at the beginning of this year, and I know he's on the EPW committee, and we're supposed to meet with him later this month to chat about some things.
Well, Vice President Mr. Pence is from Indiana as well. Hopefully you all should try to meet with him too.
Well, we have, and of course we haven't heard much, but there's also a Pence site in a Keel Brothers oil site in Franklin, so that's kind of where things get very slippery with politics, because Vice President Pence's family owned gas stations, Keel Brothers gas and oil stations, for decades, way back when, and one of those was in Franklin, and it's now a brownfield site, so it's contaminated as well, and it's less than a half a mile from the Amphenol site, so we have a lot going on right there. But that site, you know, it's a, how are you going to get him to come help us with contamination when his family
well
contaminated
we see that we see that quite often, where people will put you know, money over the health of human beings, or put money, you know, in politics. But you know what, when I was reading up about this, the EPA has known for decades that industrial site had been contaminated with chemicals, yet they did little about it to address the concern. So why do you think the EPA even didn't get involved with this until you, Carrie Reinhart, thank you so much, you and your friend started investigating this?
Well, because they had it under a program called RCRA, and they considered it basically in a monitoring status that it was controlled. But no one ever looked and did any scientific data at the EPA or otherwise to make sure that it was controlled. And to call it controlled from the beginning was ridiculous, because they knew for 10 years that there was contamination on site before they put in the pump and treat. So how all those contaminants were expected to stay on site for 10 years is ridiculous. You know, no one should have had. So to get the EPA or anyone really to move, it took us doing the very first round of testing where Edison Wetlands from out of state funded it, and we went into people's homes. We tested 14 homes at the beginning last July, and three of them came back with levels that were exceeded the EPA or local level regulations. And from there, that's when they started listening.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you for enlightening us with all this stuff. I see. Now, you know, you're an RN, and in the studio today we have Matt Price, who's a nurse as well, and Sherry Daly is also a nurse, and we're all shaking our heads because today's a nurse's day, and we understand, because we take care of people. We're, and that's our profession, right? But here you are. You've had to put yourself and expose yourself to all this, caring for your child. She passed away, and now you're getting involved. Now your Facebook group is called If That Was Your Child. How is the group doing, and how can someone get involved if they wanted to help you? And is it Stacy, your friend, who's doing it with you?
Stacy Davidson. She's the co-founder, and she and I are incredibly close friends who we say we've been bonded by, obviously, our tragedies, but it's beyond that. So If It Was Your Child has a website, ifitwasyourchild.org. And then we also have a Facebook group and page that people can go on to keep up with things. Mostly right now what we need is people to let the EPA know that we would like them to expand the investigation beyond the area that they're looking at now. Right now they're looking at a very small area that doesn't include the two elementary schools, which contamination was found in those schools, and they actually shut down for a day this spring to address the issue. So we've asked the EPA to widen their area, and we ask people all the time to help us with different projects, whether it's sending postcards, making phone calls, or writing letters. It's a huge, you know, Stacy and I are two women who work full-time. We both have kids, and we try to stay on top of as much as we can, but the more people who get involved, the better.
Yeah. I think my friend Matt has a question for you as well.
Yeah, I was just wondering, did they start any cleanup in that area to help protect other people in the area?
Well, first they wanted to, obviously, they started testing homes immediately around the site where we said, hey, this is a problem. And right now they are making the company Amphenol do a work plan, or they submitted a work plan where they're going to remove all the soil and, begin cleaning up at least where we know it is the worst right now, because it's traveling in the sewers and getting into people's homes that way. So they're starting with the sewer line. Of course, everything happens at a snail's pace. So for us, we're like, why aren't they working? But they are. They're starting to test, and they're testing more homes. And that has been one encouraging thing, I will say, with the EPA and how this has gone forward right now is when they start testing, if they find contamination, they'll continue testing further out until they find the edge of it. Now, they openly admit at this point they don't believe they've found the extent of the contamination, that there is more, but right now they'll only stay in that area is what they're investigating.
Right, and how does the EPA get away with posting on their website that everything was under control without any, they said it was under control without any scientific testing to back up that claim? Is anybody being held responsible at the EPA? Because I read that article in the Indianapolis Star, and it says that the situation in May, that they were saying it was under control, but it really wasn't. They had not done the scientific testing for it.
So that's when the Office of Inspector General, when they came and they started asking, basically, when did you know there was contamination? And at this public meeting, people overwhelmingly told them, we didn't know until Carrie and Stacy started talking about it. Just like when I bought my home the year after Emma was born, I was, you know, very short distance from all of this. There was, if the state required me to sign something saying that I knew that it was all around me, I don't recall doing that, but I believe Indiana does not require that. How that, you know, the Webb Well Field, and my kids went to Webb Elementary, so it's very close, was named an EPA Superfund site, but no one that lived around it knew it. Nobody. I never heard a thing about that. So it's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, you've made our profession proud, taking, you know, matters into your own hands.
You.
We love it. And you're still working, and you're doing this on the side. So we just want to, you know, we commend you for what you're doing. Thank you so very much. We will post all this on our website. And tell us, how can we help here on Viewpoint with C10 Friends? How can Matt and Sherry and Ellen and myself, what can we do to help keep Emma's memory alive?
Oh, gosh. Just keep talking about it and keep getting the word out there, because there's so many communities like us, and we try to reach back to the communities that reach out to us, but we have a hard time keeping up with that sometimes. So just keeping up with what's going on, you know, for me, this work is Emma, and it's Sam and Sophie, her twin brother and sister, who, you know, every day miss her. So this work is, for us, it's something that we wouldn't be doing justice by her if we didn't keep talking about it. So,
and one last time, what's the website?
Facebook. ifitwasyourchild.org.
Yeah.
And If It Was Your Child is also the name of the Facebook group. And we have a group and a page.
Right.
So people can follow both.
So, Carrie, before we go off air, we just have like a minute. At her 18th birthday party, I think was last week, right? What were some of the things that her friends were saying really quick?
Oh, gosh. Everybody missed her, misses her, of course. And it's been this has been a hard year because I can't get over how big her friends are. They look grown to me. She should have graduated high school this year. But overwhelmingly, they talk about how nice Emma was to everyone, how she sincerely cared about people, and how she never had an enemy. She never had anyone that she was mean to. Even if they weren't like her, she didn't care. So I am glad that the kids remember that about her and that they continue to keep that part of her memory alive.
Right. And you've inspired so many young people to now go out and become activists and be advocates for what they think should be right, for justice for others. So thank you so much.
And we've posted everything on our Facebook page on CETA Media Inc.
Awesome.
But we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Matt and Sherry.
Portions of Viewpoint with CETA and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of CETA and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free no-credit checking and financing and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. Our show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And every week we have very fun, unscripted, very educational, and very informative information on our show, whether it's someone trying to sell a book, or someone trying to write a book, or someone who is opening a business who wants to talk about profit and loss, whatever it is, activists. Running for office, activists, advocates. We use our voices in a very responsible manner to give out information. And I have to tell you, I was so touched by Carrie Reinhart, and I know Matt and Sherry was as well, losing her daughter at the age of 13, and then finding out it could be where you live, in the earth, the water, the air you breathe. Whatever it is, it just causing so many children to be diagnosed with cancer. And how come the EPA does not connect the dots? It took 2 moms, Sherry and her friend Stacy, to start this group, if it was your child, and then find out that, yes, something could have been done. And I know you wanted to, you were going to ask her a question, you said, but she...
Yeah, I really was interested to see how she felt about the latest deregulations from the EPA for putting stuff in our groundwater, and what was her best resource to get things done, find things out.
I think her best resource, according to her, was the community standing behind them and getting involved. You know, because once people stand behind a cause or all start advocating for something, it works. It's just like what we were talking about in Puerto Rico and them having their protests. Once it only takes one person to start and do it, right? But anyways, well, now you two are advocates in your own right too, Sherry Daly and Matt Price. So both of you, we'll start with Matt. Tell us, you know, you became an advocate, and now we're all still working. We all enjoy what we do. Mm-hmm. We love taking care of patients, right? And so we want to make it different. We want to make a difference in our own profession. We want to make sure that our patients are getting the best bang for their buck, as well as getting that precious care. So Matt, tell us why you got involved in what you're doing.
Well, I got involved because I've been in healthcare now 23 years. And
you don't look past 23 yourself. That's another show, a secret.
But it, you know, it has changed so much. And even just in the last few years, it's changing rapidly. And, you know, I always think about these people that out there are talking about the fear of socialized healthcare all the time. And what is actually happening is not a government socialized healthcare, but we're going towards socialized healthcare through a for-profit system. And so all those things that people are afraid of with socialized medicine, that they're, you know, that their choices are going to be limited and their access is going to be limited, and all these things are already taking place in our healthcare system. And so I think it's time that we start engaging and making our own choice. What do we really want? Do we want to choose our own socialized system? Or are we going to allow insurers and hospitals and other people to make those choices for us?
Which is what's happening, right, Sherry?
Exactly.
And so Sherry Daly's here with us, dear listeners. She's also a registered nurse at Worcester Hospital. And she's also an advocate for safe staffing and doing what we can for our patients. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've been in the medical field for about 25 years now.
You look good, too.
Well, thank you. It's the wine.
Sherry and
I'm
I used
kidding.
To work in the same place. Oh, my God. How long was that? Let's see. Maybe I want to say
23 years ago.
Mm-hmm. We worked together briefly.
Yes. So, and I got involved when I started seeing people going broke with medical bills. And it became very important for me to educate myself about single payer, just the medical systems around the world, and see directly how that affected patient care and the outcomes for these patients, and not just look at it as a monetary thing, but an outcome for a person in their lives, in their daily living,
right,
and their financial success in life.
Right.
So for me, it was very important not to see someone. No one should go broke because their child has a heart defect. No one should go broke because they've developed an autoimmune disorder in their 40s, like myself.
And we all know what happened to their paychecks. If you get sick on a Monday and you're on the schedule Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that means that paycheck coming home while you're in the hospital is going to have 4 days' pay short. Mm-hmm. And you're already living paycheck to paycheck. And then guess what? You won't be able to pay your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're right.
And not just that. Insurance companies selling junk policies to people, and people not understanding the process of insurance companies. I don't know many people who are happy with their jobs and their jobs insurance.
And the deductibles.
And their deductibles, except maybe people in government. I'm sure they're happy with theirs.
Yeah, and the complexity in those plans now, there's so many different layers and new definitions that get entered into it. So you might be in network, but yet you're tier A or tier B.
Oh, but
and
the drugs.
All of a sudden.
That drives me nuts with the drugs.
You might be like a PPO or, you know.
Well, you know, Matt, here's the thing, right? People always talk, some folks are using the word socialism as a bad thing, but let's be honest. Public school system, we all pay for that.
Yeah.
Fire department.
The roads. Go ahead. Let's list off all the things that enjoy the minute we wake up to the minute we go to bed. Start with the roads. Transportation.
Yeah.
Healthcare.
Yeah.
Education.
Water, sewer.
Yes.
Trash.
Yeah. I mean, all those are things that we all pay for with our tax dollars to enable human beings to have a better life. Now, when we had a practice. I'm not going to lie, Medicare was awesome. I don't know why people go around and say, well, Medicare is not, they don't take care of the people and it's not run well. It is run well. You call the 1-800 number, you tell them your situation, they tell you everything, they pay well, everything. And that is socialized medicine, isn't it? So is the VA. I know you mentioned that a little while ago, that people with the VA benefits, they deserve it, but it's also run by the federal government, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So why is there such a disconnect with people who are against Medicare for All or single-payer system? Now, I've kind of said to myself, the single-payer system, where if you want to buy into Medicare, I don't see a problem with that. Do you?
No, I think that's the power of choice. You know, people can choose whether that's the right thing for them, if they want to enter into that system, and it gives them access to insurance that maybe they didn't have before. Maybe they only had an employer plan, or maybe they only had a limited other plans that are out there based on their disease or their condition. And so that would allow them to enter into a system that they would have equal coverage with their neighbors and everyone else. And they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't think, I have insurance for something, and then they go to use it and find out, oh, well, it doesn't cover that completely. You're going to have a lot of out-of-pocket.
Well, I you know what? I know that Sherry and I both were employed in nursing facilities. And, you know, what really gets me sometimes is people just rattle off what other people are telling them. They don't listen. They don't read. They don't understand. If you have a semi-private room, you may have one patient who is writing a check for $10,000 a month, and the other one is on Medicaid, right? Well, guess who's paying for Medicaid? We are, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody wants a piece of the pie, but you have to understand that the taxpayers want to know where their money is going, right? Whether it's the war, whether it's healthcare, whether it's the public education, whether it's the EPA cleaning up. But we also want people to read and understand it's not only about the rich and the 1%. We're all in this together, aren't we?
Yes.
Absolutely. And there are programs that they're talking about where you can have a government insurance with an option to buy into another insurance. So people could have that option, not just say want to rely on a government health insurance. And people need to take the time and really research and understand and do the work to figure out what would work best for them or what would work best for their neighbor together, because we are all in it together.
Right.
And either you're going to pay the insurance companies for profit or you're going to pay it in taxes. Either way, you're still paying out of pocket.
Right.
And you have much more control over your health care if you're involved in it.
And you were saying earlier that you guys saw a decrease in people coming to the emergency rooms after the ACA, which is Obamacare, right? A lot of people don't like the name, so we'll just ACA. You also a decrease, and not just at Woosuff Hospital, but all around the country, people were able to go to a physician and talk about preventative care and talk about their health, right? And because if they didn't, we'd be picking up the tab.
Absolutely. And with the HCA, I know that it's not the perfect plan, and I know that a lot of states like Florida, they didn't do the expansion. There's lots of things to be worked on for it. But we did see a decline in people coming through the ERs because they weren't using the ER as an emergency, as a regular doctor's appointment. They were going to their doctors, having preventative care, getting checked. Preventative medication is the best way to save this country money. It's to stay healthy and be healthy in the, for the long run, instead of not getting checked.
And we all know
it
what
was
happens.
Definitely broken and before.
Definitely
and
at least broken
it was,
before.
So, and we moved in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
we improved access to
exactly.
healthcare for
and,
people.
And, right. and you held up the sign, Sita, on the side of don't let's fix it. Don't
right.
fix it. Right?
Well, not only that, what happens when you wake up every day and you're healthy, your family's healthy, your neighbors are healthy, and everybody is healthy and happy, they become more productive. How much money do we lose when people call in sick? And the co-workers have to work short. And then that goes right to the heart of our message today about staffing. Mm-hmm. What happens when we don't have enough staff, whether someone called in sick or whether the facility didn't have enough people who applied for jobs and were there working? You want to take that question, Sherry? What happens when we're short-staffed or we're compromised?
Well, productivity and safe staffing, obviously, if you don't have the staff to take care of your patient, mistakes are going to be made. Nurses are going to be overworked. Things are going to get missed. And unfortunately, in this day and age, for-profit medicine is really dangerous to people.
Yes. So Matt, you've worked as a nurse for a very long time. What happens if a patient says to you, nurse, how many patients do you have? How many nursing assistants are going to be helping me with my ADLs? And do you have more patients than normal? How do you answer that question to a patient, knowing very well that there are times when this is not so?
Right. Well, I am very open and honest with them that how many patients that I have to care for and what's going on. And I let them know that I'm going to do my best to deliver full care to them. But there may be a little bit longer delay, even though they're paying that same insurance that we were talking about. They're paying that same rate as the other person next to them. They may have to wait longer because either the corporation has decided to short staff, or the nursing shortage has affected the healthcare staffing as well. So I have to tell them there may be some delays there.
So you ask the patients to have patience.
Yes.
And work with us.
And sometimes help remind us, because when you're busier, you may forget that little thing that someone hasn't walked there three times a day. Maybe they've only walked two, and they need that little reminder. Hey, do you have a few minutes to walk me before the end of the shift?
Or, right. And do you feel like overwhelmed sometime in our profession? It's like we have to take care of so many people and always smile and give them the best that we have. But inwardly, we know very well that there are times when we can't.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think that has increased our turnover in healthcare for nurses, for nursing assistants, for all our ancillary staff, because they are so overwhelmed with everything that they need to do and all the tasks that continually get added to them that they know that they can't possibly complete all of them. And so at the end of the day, they feel inadequate because they weren't able to give that 100% that they want to give every single day to every patient.
You know, Sherry, once I think I told Ellen this story before. I was speaking with a CEO of one of the local hospitals here in town, and he says, hey, I know you're working nursing homes and stuff. And I said, yeah, I was hoping to have a conversation with you. I said, you know, if you would just put more manpower on the floors, more human hands to turn, reposition, lift, raise up the bed, help someone to actually cut their food up and feed them, look at the dentures, if they're ill-fitting or not, pay attention to the patient, then we wouldn't have things like urinary catheter infections, bed sores, central line infections. We won't have people who are falling, and we could actually spend time teaching each other about good hand washing and all these techniques. What do you think about that, Sherry, about having the extra hands on the floor instead of people just pushing paperwork?
Well, it's very important, and we all know that the hospitals get paid by the government by these surveys from people that they take, and it goes by the numbers. So it's important to have people take care of the patient. If you have a happy patient and a happy staff, the numbers will go up. You'll get your money from the government, the hospitals, and you'll have patients happy and safe, your nurses happy and safe. Now, this is a cascade thing with staffing. This also leads to violence against nurses because of the aggravation of the patient not getting
services.
Their needs met.
Yes.
And trust me, we really want to make sure that the patient's needs are met. That's why a lot of us went into this profession, because we love to take care of people. We generally adore taking care of people. And the way nursing jobs have changed now, it's become paperwork, meeting numbers. They've taken the patient care
the joy
part
out of Florence Nightingale part of it, mm-hmm. where you walked into a room and you helped someone to, you know, in nursing, they teach us when you do a bed bath, the patient gets a back rub, you know, you put lotion on your skin. But really and truly, a lot of people don't have the time for that.
No.
When you do a breathing treatment, you're actually supposed to listen to the lungs before
mm-hmm.
and after, so you could document. But I challenge any nurse in the United States of America to actually tell us if you're spending time. They can't, because they don't have time, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of missed care that goes on, and there's a lot of research out there that shows that when we have adequate staff, that missed care does not happen. Mm-hmm. But missed care happens all the time, mm-hmm. and missed care ends up leading to other problems.
When did it become, Matt, that healthcare became such a business that is only about the profit? Like, I know once a friend of mine told me the CEO of one of our local hospitals had a business degree from, this was years ago, from one of the colleges. I'm not sure if it was universities, a four-year degree, making over $250,000 a year, while a nurse makes under 50. Where's the justification in someone who's making that much money? The CEO profits.
And a bonus.
The CEO profits and the bonuses is outrageous.
Options, profit sharing.
Yeah, I mean, when did it become that the business of taking care of people is all about money?
Well, I think we have such access to information now that we didn't have before, that it's much easier for them to analyze data that's collected on people and decide whether or not it's worth taking a risk. You know, we talk about risk in all business, but now it's a big discussion in healthcare. Is it okay to take a risk when only one patient is harmed out of every 1,000 patients? And those kind of discussions go on all the time. And it's weighed against ethics. And I think, how could any healthcare professional make that kind of decision, knowing that there is going to be that one that is going to have some sort of harm, or they're not going to get well as quickly? So it's really questions that, you know, we didn't hear much about maybe 23 years ago when I started nursing. And now it seems like it's what's driving healthcare. If for us to have efficiency or greater efficiency is the end all today, instead of asking how are we better caring for the patient.
Or, I know you want to just Sherry wants to jump in on this one.
Yeah, it's not just that. It's special interest groups and for profit things like pharmaceutical companies, insurance
companies,
health
agencies,
home health, where there's a profit being made off the backs of these patients, and unfortunately that's the case, where you've got people going up to the government who make money from these pharmaceutical companies, who pay them for legislation.
The lobbyists.
The lobbyists.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's true. And people don't understand that not all the time they're looking out for them. That's why you have to be your best own advocate. That's when you go in the hospital, it's best to know what medications you take. It's fantastic. I love it when they ask questions. I love it when they say, what medication are you giving to me? Because you are your own best health care advocate.
You're your own best friend, right?
Exactly.
So what are some of the things? I mean, we know that people are already anxious when mm-hmm. they're told they have a disease or they have to go into the operating room to get something cut, snipped, and zipped. People are already worried. They might have pets at home. They may have children to take to and from school. They may have a job that they have to figure out if they're going to still have a job when they come out. What are some of the things, the guidelines that we should give our folks out there who's listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends? Matt, what should they do before they come into the hospital? We have to prepare yourself mentally and physically.
Well, I mean, I think you certainly need to look at the risk. Is it a surgery that you have to have done, or is it elective surgery that you maybe can put off? You definitely want to compare your options of where you have your surgery. Be looking where it's safest. Who has the lowest infection rates? What can you do to reduce your infection rate? I know many doctors have their patients do an antibacterial scrub before they ever come to the hospital, and then we'll do a second one when they come to the hospital to help lower their infection risk.
And good hand washing.
Yes.
How about the good old good hand washing? Last time you said you didn't get to mention that.
Yeah.
But I tell you, good old-fashioned soap and water. And sing. What do you sing? Happy birthday? Do we still do that, or we just do it for 30 seconds?
Twinkle, twinkle.
Yeah. It was still happy birthday.
Or we use the alcohol wash, which, you know, it takes care of about 99% of bacteria. So whichever you do, you know, it's important, because whether you're doing it for yourself or the people that are coming, the caregivers to come into your room taking care of you, you want to make sure that everyone is washing their hands. Visitors coming in to visit, They're not coming in sick. If they have to come in to see you sick, they need to wear a mask. So you have to protect yourself as well and be engaged in your health care.
And you can check that, right? You can check the safety grade. You have that on the...
Yes. Yeah, yes. You know, we've had... my husband worked at Wusthof in the emergency room for about 16 years, and he absolutely loved the staff and the people at the hospital, and they do render very good care, I have to say. I've had friends who've been there, and they like it. But, you know, when we're having a discussion, we want to help make it better. That's all it's what it's about. Mm-hmm. But, Sherry, you know, one of the things that happens when people are admitted into the hospital... Sometimes they're not seen by a social worker. And what is the discharge process? Because sometimes you don't have enough social workers on staff. And sometimes after discharge, people want to know, what do I expect? Well, how do I prepare myself for discharge?
I'm going to tell you, Matt's probably more familiar with that, but I can answer that question about surgery since that's where I work.
Yeah.
I always recommend to people, even to my mother at home, start off by keeping a medication list on your fridge, because when firemen or health care workers come in, ambulance, that's the first place they'll look if something were to happen to you. Also keep one in your wallet. Mm-hmm. All right? The next thing is, if you're going to have surgery, let's say if it's a total knee replacement, find out if your aftercare can be done in-home with rehab, if you don't have anybody there to help take care of pets or things like that, or if you're going to be going to a place where you're going to have to stay,
yeah,
a facility for rehab. There are places in pet areas that you can have a sitter come to your house, or you can send your pet out to.
So do your homework ahead of time.
Do your homework. That's the best bet. Ask somebody you know that works in surgery or has a friend that works in surgery. Get a second opinion.
You could contact Meals on Wheels and things like that. You know what I do find, too? Like, a lot of the physicians drive up with their Porsche and expensive cars, and they're in the hospital and doing surgeries. But how many of them are actually advocating for safer staffing? Patients that need assistance at home, how many of them are actually voting for people in the community to get involved with healthcare, not as a profit, but as a right? I always wonder, when you make a lot of money, and thank God, United States, we do. We make money, we pay our taxes, we love it. Why don't more people get involved in what we're doing, Matt?
Well, I think they do to some extent, but it seems like people kind of follow what organization they're with, like politically or legislatively. And so the hospital associations and sometimes the medical association, mm-hmm, don't come on board with safe staffing and the people that are actually the ones at the bedside round the clock that are doing all of the care, carrying out their orders. So I think we need to come together collectively and give more voice to the people at the bedside and allow them to have protections for against retaliation and whistleblowing, and we would see that change very quickly, because we know there's just not enough staff, and it gets shorter and shorter throughout the U.S. all the time.
Yeah.
What a great conversation.
I know. I want to bring them back, because yes, this is near and dear to my heart, because this is something I could talk about without any paperwork in front of me.
Exactly.
Because at the end of the day, what do we all want?
Safety,
security, an education, a job with dignity, and we want to be loved and appreciated.
And one day it's going to be you or your family member.
One day we're going to be that person in that bed, and we're going to want somebody to take care of us 100% and make us feel well. And you know what? Tell us that you love us. Hold our hand. You
Sherry
never know.
Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Right,
exactly.
Thank you.
Sita, another fantastic episode, and thank you so much. And congratulations on your nomination.
Yay.
And your win.
I forgot about
absolutely
that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week, next Monday at 1 p.m.